Good evening. The Heroes Act, $100 billion for schools, a data dump exposes the police fusion centers, what we're learning about a new era of spying by law enforcement, and a new move to cancel rent. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, July 15th. 2020. And Chile's Chamber of Deputies Wednesday passed a historic bill allowing citizens to withdraw 10% of their pension funds to deal with the effects of the pandemic. The vote came after protesters took to the streets to support the bill and against President Sebastián Piñera. Lawmaker said that it's an unprecedented victory over Piñera's administration, which has been resistant to use pension funds despite the economic crisis. The measure won by two votes more than the 93 required. Residents banged pots from their homes as a way to show their discontent. In the country's capital, massive protests were reported in various neighborhoods. Opposition to spending the pension funds went back to the days of dictator Augusto Pinochet, who opposed the measure passed today. And Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was admitted to Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore Tuesday after experiencing a fever and chills related to a possible infection. A spokesperson for the court said the justice is resting comfortably and will stay in the hospital for a few days to receive intravenous antibiotic treatment. The 87-year-old judge is the oldest justice on the court and has experienced a series of health issues in recent years, including treatment for cancerous growths in her lungs. And today is delayed tax day in the United States. The income tax filing deadline generates billions of dollars in payments that would have been due in April. After the federal government moved its income tax filing date to July 15th from April 15th, the 41 states that tax wages also extended their deadline, with most also pushing it to July. The Tax Foundation projects a 9% drop in fiscal 2021 personal income tax revenue compared with fiscal 2019. And the economic recovery and stimulus package known as the HEROES Act continues to wind its way through Congress. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the surge in coronavirus cases means the president should act on his neglected promise to use executive authority to get needed supplies into the hands of frontline workers.
So what we need very strongly is for the president to implement the Defense Production Act immediately. To address the need for the testing equipment and equipment to make judgments about positive or negative. It also needs to be implemented, the Defense Production Act, we'll call it the DPA from now on, for PPE, so essential. So if we want to open our economy, and now if we want to open up our schools, we have to have the testings. We have to have the judgment. We therefore need the equipment, and we also need the PPE, the personal protective equipment. We need that. We need that. We need to have the separation in the schools. We need the equipment for sanitation, cleaning the schools. Again and again, this costs money, but it also needs equipment to get the job done. So again, both of those are contained in the HEROES Act. And the third, putting money into the pockets of the American people. That security, that in stimulus to our economy is very important, with unemployment insurance expiring at the end of July, as well as the need for us to put into place the direct payments. Very, very important, direct payments to individuals and families in our country. There are other things in the bill that I'll talk about in terms of funding for voting at home, issues that relate to feeding the hungry with our food stamp increase that is in there, protecting the post office, and also having a strong OSHA provision. But getting back to opening the schools directly, all of it relates. When we're opening the schools, we have to understand how we're going to feed the children if they're learning, if they have distance learning, how we're going to have the equipment for them to engage in district learning if we haven't taken the steps necessary in a safe way to open up the schools. So in the CARES Act, we have specific legislation that calls for the use of the DPA, the Defense Production Act, for the purpose of PPE and equipment and all the rest. That's in the HEROES Act. Some of it was in the CARES Act. And to that point, yesterday, a number of our chairmen, including Frank Pallone, wrote to the Secretary of the Army and the Secretary of HHS and spelled out what was in CARES and what was in HEROES in order to, specifically what was in CARES, because that's been a while, to increase production of medical supplies and equipment under DPA. But then they go into how it hasn't, even though allocated, hasn't been spent. Again, I have four daughters who have children in school from grade school to college. It is a cause of great concern, I know, in every family in America, some with more options than others. And we have to think of those with the fewest options and take the greatest care for all of our children, but recognizing the challenges that are faced by families if they make this difficult decision, and school districts that are currently making decisions about how and when to open.
And that's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Dr. Anthony Fauci said in an interview today, it's time to stop the nonsense and do the hard work necessary to defeat the virus. President Trump, for his part, said he has no problems with Dr. Fauci, who's been critical of the White House response to the pandemic.
Well, he made a statement representing himself. He shouldn't be doing that. Now, I have a very good relationship with Anthony.
And he was talking about Peter Navarro, one of his aides, who wrote an op-ed yesterday in the USA Today that basically called Fauci a liar and someone who was wrong all the time. Fauci, a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, said Wednesday that the inevitable happened after the U.S. tried to reopen, and he saw pictures and photos and films of people at bars with no masks congregating in crowds. The United States saw a record number of new cases Tuesday with 67,417, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. As of Tuesday, more than 3.4 million people have been infected, and 38 states reported an increase in the number of new cases from the week before. But Trump's push to reopen schools on time in September is getting pushback as more states have retreated from plans to reopen during the current surge in cases. Today, the chair of the House Education and Labor Committee, Democrat Bobby Scott of Virginia, had this to say.
The HEROES Act includes emergency funding that is necessary to maintain student success, access to education, a comprehensive testing strategy to ensure that we can identify, isolate, and treat anyone infected with COVID-19, and enforceable workplace safety standards to protect educators and other school staff. And of course, when you protect the workers, you also have to protect the students. Instead of working with House Democrats in this legislation, Senate Leader McConnell dismissed the bill and failed to offer an alternative option to safely reopen schools and the economy. Worse, he dismissed the very real threats presented by the unprecedented budget shortfalls facing states and local governments that could force devastating cuts to public education. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's failed response to the pandemic has needlessly led to spikes in new COVID-19 cases in communities across the country. Yesterday, five states set records for daily new cases of COVID-19. As we've seen all over the past week, the Department of Education has no plan to bring students back into the classroom safely, particularly in communities where daily new cases of COVID-19 continue to rise. The strategy thus far has consisted of tweeting, threatening to cut off funds from school districts, and telling school officials to figure it out on their own. Students, parents, and educators deserve better. The HEROES Act reflects our commitment to not just hoping schools can reopen safely, but taking action to safely bring students back into the classroom. The average school district will need an additional $1.8 million to safely reopen. But instead of helping schools comply with the CDC guidelines, this administration's solution is to try to water down the guidelines. Our solution, the HEROES Act, includes $100 billion for education, with nearly $58 billion of that dedicated for K-12 schools. It includes $1 trillion to help state and local governments address looming budget shortfalls and to avert potentially devastating cuts in public education. If this funding is not available, any federal appropriation to education will only partially offset the cuts in the state and local at the state and local level, and the additional costs to reopen safely will not be addressed. In addition, this package also dedicates $75 billion to strengthen our testing and contact tracing efforts. As other countries have demonstrated, investment in testing is critical to stopping the spread of the virus and restarting the economy and reopening our schools. The HEROES Act also directs OSHA to issue an enforceable emergency temporary standard to protect workers from airborne infectious diseases. That would help protect America's workers, including teachers and school staff, by replacing unenforceable voluntary guidance with mandatory enforceable standards. The CDC has made it clear that reopening schools to full-time in-person instruction carries the highest risk of producing a spike in COVID-19 infections. Over the past month, we've seen such spikes play out in communities across the country. For example, a summer camp in Missouri was recently forced to close after 82 children and staffers contracted COVID-19. Last month, three Arizona summer school teachers who shared a classroom all contracted COVID-19. Tragically, one of those teachers died. Rather than downplaying the risk of reopening the schools, we should be doing everything we can to make sure that they can reopen safely.
Bobby Scott is the chair of the House Education and Labor Committee. Meanwhile, Alabama became the 36th state to require masks in public. The mandate from Governor Kay Ivey is part of an amended Safer at Home order her office announced. Walmart, the world's largest retailer, is the latest national chain to require all customers to wear masks. The change is set to begin next week. Walmart joined Starbucks, Best Buy, and Costco in requiring shoppers to wear masks. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say everyone should wear a cloth face covering when they have to go out in public. The CDC said face coverings are meant to protect other people. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. An anonymous group of hackers released gigabytes of data taken from web servers belonging to so-called fusion centers earlier this month. The fusion centers were set up by the Department of Homeland Security. They're meant to facilitate communication between law enforcement and intelligence agencies after the 9/11 attacks. The leak was published by a group called Distributed Denial of Service. They say they're helping reporters get information on the shadowy organizations. Among the information released, innocent protesters accused of radicalization, as if they were terrorists. A member of Distributed Denial of Service's board and information security director of The Intercept is Michael Lee.
It's 269 gigabytes of data. A hacker hacked about 251 law enforcement websites and then sent all of this data to this transparency organization called Distributed Denial of Secrets. And I'm on the advisory board of Distributed Denial of Secrets.
What is Distributed Denial of Secrets?
It is a publishing organization. I guess you could think of it as similar to WikiLeaks, but trying to have less problematic politics. But it's basically a publishing organization where when there's big leaks of data, it just tries to make the leaks available for journalists and for the public.
When did this Blue Leaks information come about?
At the end of June is when Distributed Denial of Secrets published all of the data.
And what kind of data was it?
There are these organizations called fusion centers, the law enforcement fusion centers. And basically, these are collaborations between different jurisdictions. It depends on the fusion center, but generally it's between local police departments, sometimes state police, and then sometimes the FBI or sometimes the Department of Homeland Security or other federal agencies. And basically the purpose of these fusion centers is to more broadly share information between the different jurisdictions. What happened was this company called NetCential that built the websites and hosted the websites for hundreds and hundreds of these fusion centers and also some other types of law enforcement websites. They all got hacked. And so all of the data on all of these websites was exposed.
And what kind of data was it?
Mostly it was office documents and PDFs. These include things like suspicious activity reports where law enforcement is logging reports of things that a lot of times are not actually illegal, but that somebody thinks is suspicious. Because these were websites that were hacked and because lots of law enforcement officers had accounts on these websites and they could log into them. Each website has a list of user accounts, and all of that data was compromised too. And the user accounts include the names, the email addresses, in some cases, phone numbers and home addresses and password hashes of people with accounts, which are mostly law enforcement officers.
What is the purpose of these fusion centers where this information is collected?
Fusion centers started after the attacks, the terrorist attacks of September 11th. And the reason that they started was because there were all of these disparate law enforcement agencies that had various information that could have potentially stopped the 9/11 attackers, but they weren't communicating with each other. And so this was the biggest thing that the federal government realized it was doing wrong. After 9/11, it wasn't sharing information. The Department of Homeland Security started fusion centers for the purpose of sharing information to stop terrorism. But what they end up doing is sharing intelligence, and a lot of it is very low quality. I'm actually not sure exactly what they all do because this has all been very secret. And I think that BlueLeaks is going to expose the inner workings of how it works. But for example, one of the things that I found revolves around this college student in Oregon. Right after the George Floyd protests started, she was writing messages to lawyers trying to find law firms that could represent protesters pro bono. She wrote a letter to this lawyer in the Bay Area, and the lawyer in the Bay Area was like infuriated and wrote this anonymous letter that was like in all caps, calling her an Antifa terrorist, and says like happy hunting, and was reporting her. And then this college student who wrote a very polite letter ended up in the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center database as like a suspicious person for radicalization.
Usually there we talk here about that in terms of Islamic fundamentalist radicalization of people over the internet. Are they talking about George Floyd protesters, police brutality, shut down the police type protesters as being worthy of such radicalization terminology?
That's the clear implication. The reason why it just struck out to me is because it's so absurd, because it's basically just normal American activism. This is what people always do. Whenever there's protests, there's always some legal support for protests. And this is just a young student saying like, hey, there's nationwide protests against police brutality. I want to help these protesters. And she ended up basically being accused of, I think the category was radicalization/extremism.
Where does this go from here?
There is going to be a lot more stories coming from this set of data. So much of it has not been looked at yet. And there's going to take months and months and months of journalists digging through it, but I think that there's going to be a lot more interesting stories about the inner workings of policing in the United States coming from this.
Michael Lee is a member of Distributed Denial of Services Board and Information Security Director of The Intercept. The information dump from the fusion centers is now being called Blue Leaks, a reference to the use of the database by police agencies. And housing advocates held a Zoom press conference today calling on New York State legislatures to enact a package of bills that will create a stronger eviction moratorium, cancel mounting rent debt, and rehouse homeless individuals. The aim was to pressure state legislators to pass these bills when they're back in session in Albany next week. It comes as many unemployed black and brown tenants in New York are vulnerable to eviction and getting crushed by rent debt that they can't pay back. At the same time, more than 100 homeless New Yorkers have died in the shelter system because of COVID-19. Some excerpts from today's news conference.
Our next speaker would be Esteban. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the eviction moratorium.
The legislature can cancel the rent. Regardless of what they tell you, they can cancel the rent. They can extend this moratorium. They can house our homeless neighbors. And they can do it right now. They're going back into session. If they don't do it, I'm telling you here, I'm telling them at home and to the reporters that are listening or watching, we're going to call that out. The pandemic has been going on since March. And they have not acted. Cuomo has not acted. The courts have not acted. And we are now in almost August, and the proverbial stuff is gonna hit the fan soon. Now, if they don't do it, we're gonna make them do it. We're gonna have to find a way to do it. But like, there are desperate people trying to not get evicted right now, and We're not just going to go quietly. Just not going to do it. We've worked too hard to survive and to keep our homes through several crises. We're just not going to do it anymore.
Our next speaker is Lisa. She's going to really talk about, you know, about canceling rent and what that means.
People have been unable to work, and it's not because they don't want to. It's because they've been unable to. We've been told to stay home for our safety. And the economic impact of this whole crisis has been crushing. It's huge. And there are so many people who have not been working or whose incomes have been impacted in a variety of ways who are struggling to make ends meet. People were already financially struggling before this. And with COVID-19, now the rug has been taken out from under people who were already struggling. The solution to this is to cancel rent universally. So there's a bill that was introduced by Julia Salazar and Yulin Mui, and the bill is designed to provide relief for all. It cancels rent universally from March 7th for the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, plus an additional 90 days, which gives people a chance to potentially find work once things open up, gives people a chance to get their finances together, and just gives people some relief without having to fill out applications. The universal nature of this bill is important because there's a lot of people who fall between the cracks, who are unable to fill out paperwork, who may have uncertain immigration status, who are afraid to come forward. So it needs to be universal. Also, too, it creates a small landlord hardship fund for small landlords, nonprofit landlords, and public housing authorities that makes up for the lost income due to lost rent. So landlords are not being left out of this, but we are looking to help tenants. Also, if landlords opt into the fund, they must open their books to prove hardship, freeze rents at the pre-COVID level for 5 years, and abide by good cause eviction for 5 years.
One of our next speakers is going to talk about a homeless New Yorkers program, Lourdes. Lourdes from Neighbors Together.
This bill is resembling of Section 8, only it doesn't have restrictions or the eligibility restrictions that the previous Section 8 bill had. Now, who would help? The Section 8 voucher would help individuals who are not only in shelters, but are on the brink of homelessness, individuals who are couch surfing or shacked up with friends, neighbors, and so forth. We're not trying to throw landlords under the buses. We're not trying to forget that they are also individuals who need to survive. But the homeless have been undercounted. The homeless crisis has not been due to the COVID, but rather it has been increased by it. We've had 92,000 individuals that are homeless. How does homelessness affect us in every way possible? It affects healthcare. How can you possibly have a daily conference stating that individuals should stay 6 feet apart from each other and should stay home and so forth when individuals have no homes to stay in? The funds are there. Billion-dollar companies can get bailouts, then the funds are there. The real estate, the empty lots, all of those things are there. The resources are there. What we need is for Cuomo and for our elected officials to care a lot more about us and the underprivileged, especially for the Black and Latino community, which has always historically been undercounted. And quite frankly, we've been screwed over for far too long. It is hard for an individual to say, I want to pay my rent. And even though I am working, I cannot afford to. I want to be able to give you your money. However, that means that I cannot eat for a week. That means that I cannot provide train ride to the place of employment where I will get the money that I need to eat. And therefore, so all of these things they're aware of.
I don't even want to talk anymore. Lord, you came in hot saying everything that needed to be said.
I should have apologized from the beginning because I knew I was going to get emotional. I know so many people who have been working hard for years to try and help the homeless crisis. And again, it's rising. It's rapidly rising. It's not on the lack of we don't want to do anything. It's on the lack of you turn the tables against us and then ask us to bury ourselves out of there. When you're sitting high and mighty, no, That's not how that we can't stand for that anymore.
We need these three bills. We need the cancel rent bill. We need the eviction moratorium bill. And we need to make sure that New Yorkers, the homeless New Yorkers, have a place to stay. Those are things that we need, that we have to have.
And that was the press conference today. It was organized by Housing Justice for All and Right to Counsel New York City Coalition. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, July 15th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.